When I'm thinking about health of a business when it comes to reinvesting, I'm thinking about what are the operations of this business? What do they do? How do they earn money? And are there purchases, like these reinvestment opportunities that they've had, are they helping them get to that point?
Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. The Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. Today, we're joined by the multi-talented Chris Mermer, an accountant with a passion for music. Not only does Chris handle the financials for Aites Creative, but he's also launching his own venture, Gemini, and has an artistic project called Vertigo Blue. In this episode, we'll explore the intersection of finance and creativity, diving into Chris's journey in the music industry and his insights on managing finances for artists and creatives. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. I've been talking to a lot of people about this episode, over the past week, and they're excited because it's a topic that we have not covered on the podcast, and it is one of the most important, in my perspective, it's one of the most important topics and just realities of being an artist and a creative in today's world. So thank you for being on.
No problem. Yeah, no, that sounds great. I'm excited to share what I got.
Fantastic. I just want to start off the podcast that we always started off the podcast. I want to ask you, what has been your favorite experience as a fan ever?
So
in the music industry. Sorry.
You bet. No, I had these locked in. I was thinking, I have two experiences that kind of stand out to me over all the years I've been going to concerts. First one's the 1975 at TD Echo Beach. I don't know if you were at that show too. Everybody I talked to seems to be at that show. It was really special.
I wasn't, but it's come up. It's been on the podcast a bunch.
You bet. That it was something magical about that. You know, it was the first concert that I went to with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like now I've been dating her for 8 years, so it's been a long time. And that was kind of our first live show music experience together. So it always sticks in my brain as like one of the best ones. It was on the beach, which is kind of weird, usually in like some dark venue, but it was daylight. Right. And you watch the sunset come down. It was pretty cool. So I was looking back at it thinking, oh, that's great. And as a fan, it's like, I always relate 1975's music to that type of feeling. It's always been positive. So.
Yeah. And there seems to be a thing with the 1975, especially like our group, our generation of music, especially like indie leaning people, like 75 is just such a reference both for live and for recorded music. And you see the influences, but you also hear the influences as well.
Totally. Totally. And I've been on projects where, in different music projects throughout the years since that time, and almost everyone, we pull up a 1975 song as a reference. Like, oh yeah, Robbers is a great tune to reference on this guitar tone or whatever it is. Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. and the second one is Turnstile. I don't know Turnstile.
I do. I have a cousin who may be listening to this podcast, Joey Demers, who is a big Turnstile fan. I don't know them that much. But I've seen him on his stories go to a couple Turnstile shows, but I don't know them.
They're the new it group for hardcore rock. So yeah. I got into that scene, later in my life, I'd say, and I just fell in love with it. And they were the first band that kind of broke this like international veil on hardcore music.
Right.
And that show, it was at History in Toronto here, and it was sweet because I was like first time I crowd surfed. First time I was into a pit, like it was fun. And I leave the show and like, I'm just drenched in sweat. Like I wore a t-shirt, like heavy cargo pants, and they were just soaked. It was one to remember for sure.
what makes a live show memorable for you?
I think it's the crowd energy. I think a lot of the live show, you have to love the music and you love the band, and knowing the songs is always helpful. But I go to a lot of shows where I don't know the artists too well. I just want to get into them and see them.
Right.
But the crowd, like the actual feeling of the crowd being into it and everybody's around, is just really into the music. I think that really makes a big live show happen.
Yeah. And if, for me on my side, like the crowd and the interaction as well between the musicians and the crowd and stuff, and just the sense of like community. And it's always great, especially in Toronto, because there's been a thing in the past couple of years that a lot of artists and a lot of fans say that Toronto don't have like quote unquote, like great crowds.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily the truth. Because I've been to some great shows, some great crowds in Toronto.
Definitely same.
For you, does an artist have a responsibility there on making the crowd great as well?
I think to a certain threshold, right? Like I think, you know, it's the artist's responsibility to kind of get people up and going. And then I think also set list planning is really important. Like Turnstile, for example, the first, you know, 20 minutes of that show, you're running around and it's getting hot and, you know, it's intense at some points for sure. Like, you know, it's not everybody's scene.
Right.
If you're actually in the middle of the crowd, the band has this responsibility to kind of cool it down a little bit. So they play like a slower song or something a little bit more subdued to let people catch their breath. And then if people have a chance to catch their breath, they could stay in and involved longer. So I think there's a little bit of management on the artist side to like, hey, let's play off each other a little bit here.
Right. And what you're saying, which is interesting, is that it's more of a management thing. So it's not always trying to get the crowd hype, but sometimes you got to bring them back down.
You got it. That's exactly it. Like sometimes it's like, oh, this is too crazy. I could see people starting to get tired.
Right. Fantastic. On the podcast, we do a quote segment. For those maybe have been listening a long time, last year was the Erykah Badu quote, basically talking about the music as an art form versus music as the music business, basically. This year, we're doing a Joni Mitchell quote from 2004. So take this in 20 years ago. She says, "I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate." So first thoughts is that it's not her that said this, it's somebody from the music business, but she heard them saying this. What are your first instincts when you hear this sentence?
You know, it's kind of tough, right? Because it, you know, talent doesn't always get you where you want to go. I think that's kind of what this quote is trying to nail, is there's a lot of unsuccessful people with talent.
Yes.
A lot of the success comes from your willingness to, you know, for a lack of a better term, I guess, play the game. You know, it's a cliche in the music industry for sure, but you're running a business as an artist. So you have to really get involved and you have to be willing to, you know, put yourself in certain situations and not just record music. Like having great music is one thing. Being an artist is another thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And then being a successful artist is another thing on top of that. And, you know, the talent side of things, I think, you know, we see it all the time. Like there's people writing songs and producing all the time. It's about their grit. And it's a shame kind of that, you know, the record label is so controlling sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, they really break that, you know, vision of an artist if they get too involved or they direct their career too much. But you have to pair talent with a lot of hard work.
Yeah, you mentioned play the game. You got to play the game. I completely have to echo what you're saying about, you know, there's one thing about, you know, artistry and stuff, but the industry, it is a business. I think you have to, you know, divide that, and creativity is one thing and your artist sort of, you know, I don't want to say like product, but your artistic output is one thing.
Right.
But sometimes as an artist, especially now in 2024, you got to put that business cap on, because you are the CEO of your own business.
You bet. It's on you.
Yeah. And more and more today in 2024.
Definitely. So, you're wearing every hat you possibly can.
Yeah. Where do you think the industry is going?
You know, I think this is an interesting one. I've had a couple people ask me this, and I don't totally know. I see a lot of trends that are happening, and something I'm kind of personally curious about is where streaming services are going. I think there's a lot of backlash in, you know, the artist payment on streaming services. Like there's this headline I saw the other day where the CEO of Spotify made more in earnings this year than Taylor Swift did from all of her royalties.
crazy,
which is nuts. So I think there's a lot of artists and a lot of people in music, like fans, who see this kind of imbalance. Yeah. So I'm curious to see what spins out of the streaming industry with like blockchain technology. Like if there's a new, I've been hearing words about, you know, new services where you fans can pay artists directly through the streaming service that, you know, you upload your music to, and then to listen, you can listen for free, or you can choose to donate some kind of money to the artist directly through the blockchain. So there's no pass through of a streaming service that then is responsible for paying the artist. It goes right to the team, which I think is cool.
Somewhat of like a Bandcamp situation.
Yeah. Something similar to a Bandcamp. Exactly. But all through like these new blockchain techs where it's, you know, I'm not too familiar with the whole world there, but it's a little more advanced on that streaming side of things. Not much as much of a purchase, but more of like this integrated streaming service.
Totally.
And then another thing I'm seeing a lot in the industry is the separation of publishing companies from a record label. So for most of the time, they're together. Like there's a recording company, like a record label, and then there's the writing side, and it's all the same team. Where there's groups now like Kilometer in Toronto, or just a team of writers, and it's all publishing. And there's a similar company in the US, Pulse Recordings, and it's just a team of writers, and they land placements on massive records.
Yeah.
So that separation of, you know, owning the master, being the owner of this copyright material, to being a writer and owning publishing, getting royalties from publishing, that separation I think is going to keep going.
Totally. And I mean, we're going to talk about things later on this topic, but there's a lot of people making a lot of money off of publishing now.
Yes.
Maybe even more than master.
Totally.
So no, it's a great, you know, for those listening, you know, we throw around the word label a lot, but publishing and distribution, both of those things are really key, especially in today's world, because the labels, you know, now I you know, I look at them as a large marketing machine and a bank, basically.
It's just a bank. It's a fancy bank.
Fancy bank, exactly. but the publishing and the distribution is where the real differentiation is.
Right.
Apart from the marketing, the marketing is a big thing on the label side. But from just like like a day to day music business front, publishing houses and distribution is really important. Are there some other new developments that you're seeing, maybe from your chair, from your position in the creative industries, let's say the music industry, that you think that other people would be interested in? Maybe some new things that are popping up that you're interested. You're like, oh, this will be cool in like, you know, a couple months or a couple years, maybe.
Yeah. You know what? I think it's cool right now too, as like a fan, I'm seeing a lot more of a drift away from, and this is me as an artist talking, a drift away from a very polished finished product.
Oh yeah.
Where you're, you know, you've been working on an album for a year and every song is perfect and your rollout is so calculated and all of that. You know, I think there's a big wave of transparency coming through from an artistic perspective, where you're showing all your failures, you're showing bad songs, you're showing good songs, demos, all the behind the scenes, and your rollout is not necessarily leading up to one big drop, but it's just a bunch of stuff along the way that, you know, in this age with music, it just keeps people engaged all the time.
Yeah. Where do you think that comes from?
You know, I want to say social media.
Yeah.
I do. But, you know, it's an attention thing for sure. But I also think that fans are kind of demanding more now just because of how much is out there. I think it's also a saturation thing. Like, I think, you know, there's a ton of artists and there's a lot of different projects all the time.
Right.
I think the way to cut through noise that I see people doing is to constantly be showing what's going on instead of being precious about the one project and this big release.
Yes. Yeah. And to that extent, almost being a little bit more on the volume versus, or like the quantity versus quality side of things.
Totally. And it's a tough double-edged sword, right? Because I think, you know, the threshold for quality, the people's what people want from quality changes with you releasing so much. Some people might be really happy with, you know, a bare bones demo, and it's like, oh, there's something new and I'm excited for them to finish this product and hear the final version compared to the demo. And even if the demo is really, you know, not perfect, it's kind of bad quality almost, or a voice note, it's still quality enough for them to be like, ah, this is dope. I love this artist. I'm having, you know, just new information from them all the time.
Yes. And, you know, I'm writing down right now that the definition of quality is changing as well.
Yes. Totally.
You know, in regards to, okay, it doesn't always have to be polished. You know, the McGee's of the world can stand out, but also the Beyoncé's are still at the top.
Arguably crushing.
Yeah. So it's like, I feel in that way, it's a good thing, because it's not that the quality is going down. It's that we're like almost redefining what that is. And
I think so,
and there's a lot more fans, and because there's now almost no limit to the music industry now, or no limit to the access, rather, that there's a lot more room for people with different tastes and different niches, and, you know, to discover so many things, because there's so many artists, like platforms like Spotify specifically allow for discoverability and stuff like that.
Totally. And I think it changes throughout an artist's career too. Like, I think that quality, you know, and the early stage of your career, you can kind of afford to not be precious. You can make demos and you can release demos, or, you know, whatever it may be. And then when you start getting that audience built up and that traction, people also kind of expect you to play up to the size of your audience.
Yes.
So they are demanding now a different level of quality. They want the big project. They want the, you know, the big release and all the creative direction behind it to be polished and perfect. And it's like a sliding scale.
Yeah, no. And I love that. And you mentioned that artists starting could be a little bit less precious with their demos. And I agree. But I also agree with now fans wanting the people at the top, let's say, their demos as well.
Exactly. You know, you saw that this week with Drake, right? Like, Drake just put out this, you know, 100 gigabyte tape of whatever it was, like demos and videos and all this. And it's like a full circle type of moment where it's like, all right, you started out, you made it big, and now we want to see you just screwing around again.
Exactly.
Figuring it out.
Yeah. Break down the wall, because people want to pull the curtain back on the artist, but also the industry.
Exactly.
What we're doing with the Cloud Machine Podcast, everybody.
Nice.
connecting it all back. I wanted to get into the bulk of our questions here. So we're here with you today to talk specifically, you know, about your projects, but also, you know, shine a light on the realities of the financial sort of part of the creative industries, and specifically the music industry. I want to talk to you first about your journey into accounting and what led you to this career path.
You know, I think I was unsure is the word I would use when I was starting out my career. You know, I didn't really know what I wanted. And I always liked the idea of being in the business world, or the accounting always came naturally to me. So I thought, okay, let me just start into here. I don't want to be dry with numbers all the time, though. Like, I like people, I like talking, I like, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes around it, but I thought, you know, I'll just give it a try. And then the more I got into it, the more I realized it's more of like a people business. So accounting kind of spoke to me that way, where it's like, I'm good with numbers, I understand it, and I can see how it applies now to real life. It's not just about bookkeeping, or it's not just about you know, journal entries. It's helping people run their business. It's helping people manage their money. It's helping people plan for their future, plan for their families. That to me is where I love sitting in the accounting world. And over time, it just kept going and snowballed, and I committed, and here I am. I'm a couple weeks out from getting the CPA. I'm just waiting, fingers crossed, on the results for, I have to get like a board approval, but I'm almost at the tail end.
Career. You're almost there.
That's it.
Now through this process and you know, also from also on the music side of things, you started this own, your own venture called,
that's right.
called Gemini. Can you speak to us a little bit more about Gemini?
For sure. Yeah. So music has always been a part of me. Like I started playing music when I was really young, like 3 or 4, and then through high school, did art school, and I was in bands, played in bands, and then even through university, like doing hardcore accounting almost the whole way through. Music was my outlet and it's always been a part of me. And then now that I, you know, I'm graduated and we're settled into a career, I keep coming back to music. It always comes back to me. And I wanted to blend my worlds together a little bit because I think there's a big, you know, gap when it comes to mixing the finances with creatives. And, you know, I think there's the poetry behind the name is Gemini is like a twin. So it's like the splitting of the right brain with the left brain. And that's kind of how the name came. And then, you know, the business itself is, you know, helping artists with their creative vision. We do a lot of music, a lot of creativity that way. And then we also want to be able to help artists and artistic businesses, creative industry businesses with their finances and growing their business as artists, as, you know, entrepreneurs, as just as people growing their finance behind the art that they make.
Right. And it's not just about the numbers, but also strategizing to grow.
Exactly. It's a lot of strategy and the numbers help you make informed decisions, which is why this blend of music and creativity that we're aiming for here, or music and finance that we're aiming for in Gemini is so important, is it gives artists this very informative financial picture so that they can make decisive creative decisions, plan out projects, plan out their releases, or plan out your next year in your business.
Yeah. What inspired you to start the group? And, you know, does it come from basically a need?
It does. And, you know, part of it is me being lucky knowing finances, as well as being like a lifelong musician that really did help. And I think it is. I've had a lot of conversations with different people throughout the creative industries. And a thing that a lot of people are really demanding right now is help with the numbers.
Yeah.
Like when it comes to grants or loan applications or budgeting, forecasting, that type of large financial decision is tough for somebody who's not necessarily familiar with numbers all the time. So this ability to breach that gap between I'm a creative, I understand your creativity, to let me talk about numbers with you and help you out with your business and figure out a plan for you to figure out your finances. I think that was the demand there. And when it comes to starting, me and my business partner, Duncan, we've been, you know, working with some capacity on a creative project for the last 10 years, I'd say, since we were 14 or 15.
Right.
So we've always been in and out of it in various ways, whether it's his project or a band we were in, or, you know, my own solo project or artists that we work with.
Yeah.
This world started building between me and him where we thought, okay, we've got something good here. He's very much just an expert in music, specialized in production and mixing. And I'm very much a songwriter, producer, but like a accounting. Like I always come back to accounting. So me and him kind of joined, started a little venture.
Fantastic. Now, when you do start with a client or you start on a project, how do you assess the financial health of a creative business? And what are some of the key indicators that you would look for, but also that, you know, maybe some of our listeners could look for in themselves as well?
A lot of the health of a business, as compared to just an individual artist, I think is cash flow. It's the most important metric that you have, is how much cash are you bringing into your business and how consistently are you able to bring it in and how reliable is that source? I think a lot of longevity that you can get out of a business is by properly managing your cash. So if you have a very sporadic income, that could also be totally fine if your cash coming in supports the cash going out.
Right.
So that's the first thing I look for. The second thing is how much debt load do you have? If you're very in debt, how likely are you to be able to pay it off, you know, in the short-term horizon versus the long-term horizon? What do you use that financing for? Those types of things all indicate the health of a business. For just to shine a light on what I just said, the way you manage like loans, for instance, you shouldn't be taking out a long-term loan to finance your operations. It's
right.
Your operations should find the cash to cover those short-term expenses. Whereas a long-term loan is better for buying like a building or, you know, pieces of equipment like computers or
right.
Any machinery that you need to like keep your business running and keep offering services.
Yeah. Your visas.
Your visas. Exactly. The credit card is a perfect one.
Oh, sorry. I meant your,
oh, your,
I meant your working visas for the States. I'm just hinting at just a loan that we just got at eights for ourselves, but yes, also your credit cards. Too. Sure. How important is budgeting for artists and creative entrepreneurs? I don't know if you have, you know, we don't need to get too into the weeds of it, but how important is budgeting? But do you have some tips around that?
Totally. I think budgeting is very important. It keeps you accountable. That's the plain and simple explanation for that is being able to plan out where you're spending your money and then sticking to it is a big thing. So any artists who are planning out a big project release, like we just had to do a bit of a budget for my own project, Vertigo Blue, with planning out the whole release of all the singles to the EP.
Yeah.
Mix engineers over time, they add up. Mastering engineers over time, they add up. Art, you know, live videos, any type of thing like that. You have to plan for these costs when you're going to your, up to your release. And something to note too is it's not ever really perfect. A budget is an estimate.
Right.
And I think a really helpful skill or helpful tool, I would say, when it comes to budgeting is something called a sensitivity analysis, where you have a worst case scenario budget. So let's say you're over expense on everything and you budget for how bad can this get?
Right.
Your average. So you're, you know, your neutral case where it's a little bit of this, I can see this going over budget. You have to be really realistic here with, you know, how you see the project going when it comes to costs.
Yeah.
And then the worst case scenario where, or the best case scenario where you save a ton of money on everything. Costs are low. I don't have to spend this. I can ask for favors, all that kind of stuff. And then you kind of get a better picture of where you land from a budgeting perspective. And then with businesses, I think the budgeting process is very important, especially in early stage businesses, because that shows you how to plan for your growth. And it shows you where your expenses might be coming up down the future that you might not be considering in current day operations.
Yes.
We're in, you know, 6 months, we need to have X amount of cash to buy our visas. Like we have a big tour planned up and we need to be able to work in the States. Like we have to, you know, cut off on some spending now. So now I see it laid out in the future.
Totally.
I can see that coming and, you know, plan for it accordingly. Very, very good skill to have is being able to budget.
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote down and, you know, highlighted the word taxes. Because you know,
everybody's favorite, it's
a scary word, especially for creative, individuals who potentially have businesses. You know, I had my first, tax return year, maybe not return, actually, but, right. but,
you had a bill.
I had a bill for sure, which I'm still paying off. I just want to ask you about some tax strategies or tips you often recommend to creatives or artists or creative businesses to better manage their finances and specifically their taxes, you know, for the end of the year, fiscal year.
You bet. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? The thing with taxes is you can't get away from it. It's a certain thing you're going to have.
Well, you shouldn't get away from it. You shouldn't. Yeah. Yeah.
You might be breaking a couple laws. But yeah, no, you know, I think knowing that it's coming is an important thing. And every year, April 30th is your personal tax deadline. And then depending on when your year end is for your business, it's 6 months after that. So, and then, you know, it gets complicated when you start earning money and you have to pay installments, but talk to an accountant. the advice I have, I would say, is to track your expenses. Keep track of your, you know, paper receipts are kind of nitpicky, right? Because you can lose them and, you know, it's hard if you're spending a lot of money and keeping a tab on all of those expenses is tough, but having a good bookkeeping software really keeps you in check because it links to your bank. So anything that goes through your bank, you can see, and then your accountant at the end of the year can plan your taxes accordingly, or you can do it yourself as well.
Right.
The other thing I would say is HST and GST, that whole relationship between charging and paying for it. Like when you purchase anything, you're getting charged HST and GST. Yeah. A lot of things that people often forget is if you're collecting GST, you have a duty to remit that back to the government so that none of that GST should stay in your hands. That's all government money. And they want it back. And they're very particular about how much of that GST you owe. And they want to see every penny of it.
Yeah.
But you also have expenses, whether that's a personal business. So if you're an artist, you know, you have, you should set up a sole proprietorship and start tracking your expenses accordingly so you could pay your taxes properly at the year end. For businesses, you might have different input costs like, office supplies, any kind of accounting software that you use for your business, any expense that relates to your business, chances are you're paying HST on that.
Yeah.
And you can get that HST back. So they net out against each other. So your bill at the end of the year shouldn't be too daunting. It's a little bit less than you might think because you get these input tax credits at the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. If you've spent close to what you received in taxes.
Exactly. That's a good caveat. Yes. If you're earning a lot, you still might have a good bill.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a pros and cons for sure.
That's right.
How do you help creative businesses navigate financial regulations and tax laws, especially in an industry with so many unique income streams? You know, there's so many things to like sort of think about, and in the industry is always changing as well.
You're absolutely right, and it's on a client by client basis, I would say, or right. Business by business basis. It's first I would say, let's get a big understanding of where your numbers, where your cash is coming from. Where are you earning income? That's important. And then let's tap into what industry you're actually working in and what regulations you have from a tax perspective, because chances are a lot of the tax regulations apply universally. There's very few instances, I would say, in startup businesses in the creative industry or even artists where, you know, your tax laws apply differently to you specifically compared to everybody else who's, you know, running a sole proprietorship.
Yes.
We're looking for income. The government wants to pay their tax on that or get their tax from that income. And then you're looking for eligible deductions. So any expenses that you have that relate to your business, chances are those all funnel under the same tax legislation as active business income. The other thing to note too is if you have, you know, any kind of investments in your business, or if you are investing inside of a business, inside of a corporation specifically, the taxing of those passive assets is not favorable. And that's because the government wants you to be using that cash to help the economy, to right. fulfill your business mission of, you know, whatever service you offer. They want that. They don't want you just parking money you make and then earning dividends on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what I mean. It's a case by case basis on, you know, what tax regulations apply to you. And they're all pretty common in this industry.
Yeah. Fantastic. So yeah, it really depends on how you're spending money. How you're earning money is I'm hearing. And because the podcast touches a lot of different listeners, it's important to know how you're making money and in what way, right? Because I'm sure that there are different tax regulations for people who are, let's say, songwriting in the States.
That's right. So there's a lot of complications when it comes to cross-border work.
Yes.
And a lot of that comes to where the services are rendered and where you got paid.
Yes.
But then everybody has this home base of Canada where, you know, you're taxed on your worldwide income here. If you're a Canadian citizen, you're doing business in Canada, there's treaties between countries that end up letting you get taxed solely in Canada. So you don't have to worry about a lot of these other countries' tax laws and regulations that way. It all flows back to you in Canada and you pay your tax here.
Fantastic.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your creative side and balancing all that stuff. How are you balancing your role as an accountant and an entrepreneur and also with Vertigo Blue?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot. It is. And I find the balancing act is often not all at once. I work a lot in sprints where, you know, last summer I had my accounting exams and everything had to get put on back burner.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's full focus for, you know, 2 months. I'm at home studying and getting these things done and, you know, actively doing accounting all the time. It's where my full brain energy is focused.
Yeah.
And then once that was done, it was like, ah, time for a break. Let me do what I like to do here. And music came in and it was like, okay, now I've got a little bit of time to like get the business up and running and let's push into this way with songwriting, production, trying to get rooms with people,
right?
That type of thing. And it all kind of goes like this. You're always playing catch up to the other thing over time. And that's how it all gets balanced. It's tough. It is tough. And you know what? I also have a personality where I always have to be busy.
Yeah.
So that definitely helps.
Yeah.
I appreciate the downtime, but hey, I like working.
I hear you, and I'm the same way. It's always like juggling a bunch of projects and making sure that you always have maybe an extra hand to catch that ball that's falling. But sometimes that extra hand is your support system as well. So
that's it. And it's that network of people. Like I know, you know, my girlfriend helps me out a ton too, and she's been very supportive about, you know, how much I actually have going on outside of just the work thing too. Because she's the same way. She's a very active person in her off time from work. And with the business, it's like, we've got a really great team of people in the community who are able to help us out all the time and keep things rolling. And, you know, we're always happy to go both ways, right? It's like, let's just keep building each other up and get things moving.
Yeah, fantastic. I wanted to ask you about financial planning for creatives. And this section it excites me because I think it's one of the more interesting parts of just my day to day right now, just running the eights with my business partner Nate Day. Shout out to Nate. He's been a friend of yours for a long time
What a great guy.
Oh yeah, legendary man for sure. How do you advise creatives on balancing saving money with reinvesting it into their projects or businesses?
Yeah, you know, I think the big thing to consider is always, how is this cash going to work for you?
Right.
Where saving money sometimes is the way to do things if you foresee a big purchase in the future or you need income to maintain your life, that type of thing. Reinvesting, you know, the word gets thrown around loosely, but you should always be thinking about your return. So if you're reinvesting into your business, those savings that you've made, that cash you've earned, is precious right now. It's the most valuable thing you have when it comes to growing or earning, is that utilization of your cash.
Yeah.
So if you reinvest, you should be putting that money into things that actually help grow your business, like new equipment or, you know, that next project that can put some money behind to push your career further.
Yeah.
Or things like that. You should be thinking about return, not necessarily just putting money back into the business and not seeing anything out of it. Saving is also great because it's back to budgeting. It helps you plan for things in the future and it gives you a little bit of a cushion, right? So let's say if things don't flow the way you expect it to flow, you do have this back burner of cash that you could kind of dip into and help support you when it comes to getting through those tougher months.
Yes. I don't know. I forget his name. I think I might be throwing out a random name here, but is it Dave Ramsey? Is that his name?
Oh, the mortgage guy.
The mortgage guy. Yeah. On TikTok.
That guy hates debt.
Yeah. He hates debt. Yeah. But I keep on coming back. I don't know why I'm thinking of this now, but he's always saying that you should have like, I think he says like 3 months of expenses, saved up. Like it's like one of his like six steps to like financial freedom or whatever he says.
You bet.
And it's just funny to for you. Is there like are there some maybe some steps or some levels to even looking at like the financial health of a business, like where they're at in regards to even saving or investing? Like, are there things that you could point out like quite easily when looking at a business that you'd be like, okay, they're reinvesting properly, let's say?
Yeah, totally. I think, the first thing is, from a planning perspective, it's good to always think about how you're splitting that money up that you receive when you earn income. So, the golden rule, I think, is 20% savings, 30% wants, 50% needs. I could be screwing that one up a little bit, but
there you go.
planning where that cash actually gets allocated to your personal life. And then you can also do the same thing within your business, where it's like, we want to build up a little bit of a push in here. Let's start saving a little bit off of each sale that we make,
right,
to put aside and plan for those times there. The 3 months is, tried and tested.
Right.
That's the saying, right?
Yeah, like tried and true or yeah, tried and tested. Yeah, one of those. Yeah.
But yeah, that's enough of a time where, if everything goes wrong, you have this buffer that you can, pull into and then find the next opportunity, like another client, let's say, for your business or another project, or really hit the boots if you need to get a job, whatever it may be. Right. It's a safety buffer. When I'm thinking about health of a business, when it comes to reinvesting, I'm thinking about what are the operations of this business? What do they do? How do they earn money? And are there purchases, like these reinvestment opportunities that they've had, are they helping them get to that point? Are they fulfilling the goal of this business? Is this something that helps them earn money? Whereas, if I see a huge expense on like meals and entertainment, you're taking out artist friends for, fine dining dinners every day.
Right.
Is that reinvesting or is that just blowing cash? Type of thing.
Totally.
It's about how you manage it towards your goals.
Yeah. Fantastic. On that, I want to ask if you had any thoughts on or advice on how creatives who might be dealing with debt, especially if you're talking about like early / young artists, mm-hmm. Maybe student debt, okay. Just like starting a business debt,
you got it.
Things like that. Like how do you have any advice on that and dealing with that?
Absolutely. I think the best way to deal with debt is taking care of your expensive debt first. And when I say expensive debt, that means high interest rate. So if you're paying a lot every month in these interest rates, the typical one is a credit card. Your credit card will charge you anywhere from 20 to 30% a month annually on any balance at the end of the month.
Right.
So if you've got, stacks of debt, let's say you've got a student loan, a car loan, and you've got a huge credit card balance that you're trying to pay down, prioritize the one that's costing you the most and get rid of that.
Right.
That'll save you the most money in the long time. And then you can start chipping away at each level. So the next one would probably be your car loan. And then the student loans are often, pretty cheap in terms of debt rate, or interest rate. But that would be my advice. Tackle the big dog first, get rid of that, work down slowly. And then, debt in businesses is a little different because debt can actually help you get financing and move ahead. If you take out debt to earn money, your goal is to actually earn more of a return on that debt than you're paying in interest. So that cash that you use to buy that new piece of equipment, you're hoping that piece of equipment can help you earn more than your line of credit rate or your financing rate or whatever it may be. So that's a little differently. And that all comes down to personal comfort level. Some people are very risk averse. Some people don't like debt. They have bad experiences with debt. Do what you're comfortable with. I think when you're comfortable with your money, you can make better decisions. And there's no reason to be going against the grain on that. There's no right answer. Debt can be a great tool, but if you're not comfortable with it, it can also be detrimental.
Right. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but can you talk about the importance of diversifying income streams for creatives, and how, you know, how you could help your clients with that?
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, we do a ton of different services through Gemini too, where it's, we do the songwriting, music production, artist development. And then we also now have this, you know, kind of financial expertise type of business. So is coming out of it too, where we have different ways of helping and sticking to our goal of being this like creative and financial blend of a company.
Yes.
And those diverse income streams help you stay more consistent throughout the year, because sometimes, you know, your music side might be very busy. Other times it's a little drier and the finance side kicks up.
Yeah.
Or the mix engineering, you know, it always levels out, and you never know where the best source is going to be for those months. When it comes to diversifying as an artist, you know, something that can get, you know, really fruitful is merch sales or physical object sales too. When you're touring or you're selling out shows, you can, you know, earn a lot of income just from merch. And then you're also earning income from your music, from your royalties, from, you know, the show itself. That type of diversification is very helpful, because
yes,
it doesn't limit you. It actually is very open to what you can earn. And, you know, there's a quote from, or not a quote, but this like philosophy. And I was talking to somebody recently about it. There's a very, very stark difference between Western business philosophy compared to Eastern hemisphere business philosophy, where a lot of these Asian companies are actually offering a ton of services. Like Samsung, for example, sells phones, but they also sell, you know, tanks and helicopters.
Yeah.
And then they also sell groceries, which is crazy. So they're kind of
Yamaha as well.
Exactly. Yamaha with motors, pianos, you know,
drums.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. So that's, and you know, you don't see a lot of that in Western businesses, because it's hyper fixated on specializing.
Right.
And getting really good at one thing and then selling on one thing. Whereas I think a lot of, you know, developing businesses, you kind of have to try a lot of things, diversify where you're making your income, and see what really sticks for you.
Yes.
See what you're really good at and what you enjoy doing too. And that's a way to kind of find your path when it comes to a creative and when it comes to running a business as well.
Great. Wanted to ask you, we've been talking a lot about creatives and, you know, advice for creatives and stuff. I want to ask a little bit about, maybe there's some listeners listening for some advice on the accountants and entrepreneurial side as well. Are there skills that you believe are essential for success in accounting, particularly in the creative industries?
You know, I think I mentioned it earlier too, but it's really a people first business.
Yes.
Successful people in finance and in this world of numbers are actually really great people.
So, people, yeah.
That's right. They are good people.
Yeah.
They know how to talk, and they know how to develop, you know, meaningful relationships with their clients and with other businesses by breaking that gap between the complexity of numbers and their understanding, the client's understanding. That type of relationship where you're able to communicate, you know, this idea of money and something that, you know, you might not be totally familiar with to your client in a way that everybody understands is so valuable. And, you know, there are other hard skills, like being able, you have to know your accounting, you have to get really involved in your education, get through the exams and, you know, compete that way. But then running a business, I feel like everything comes back down to relationships. I think relationships are the most important thing in the world. It's just a person-to-person connection. And if you're in the accounting world, being a detail-oriented person, and when you get your certification, you kind of become this voice of expertise.
Right.
And that's what people look for. They want help with making decisions. They want somebody to take the weight off their shoulders when it comes to these complex things, and being able to offer that source of surety or assurance is very important. And being confident in yourself, of course, with your skills is key too.
It's great. Can you share any mistakes or maybe not mistakes, but maybe some a few missteps or some early learning opportunities that you got maybe along your journey, your path, and what you learned, what you sort of gained from them?
You bet. You know, my accounting journey was not all uphill. Like, it was very rocky. And, you know, I went to write my exams. You know, you go through all these education stages and rigorous testing. And then I went into my exam feeling overconfident. You know, I wasn't taking studying as seriously as I should have. I was letting, you know, other personal things take priority to this goal I had,
right?
Like music or like friends or whatever it could have been. And I ended up failing my first round.
Okay.
So I ended up going through and I failed. And that's a moment where it kind of hits your ego.
Yeah.
It checks you. And big knock to the confidence. And I'm thinking, oh, should I continue on this career path? Maybe I'm not meant to be this way. Maybe I'm not a numbers person. I should pivot because I failed.
Right.
But I'm a big believer in persistence. And I think it's just part of me and everything that I do, continuing to go to press on and keep it moving and keep trying, even though I've experienced failure. It really saved my accounting trajectory, because I went back the next time knowing I had a big fail. Let me get this. Let me take care of this part of my life. And I adjusted and, you know, studied up and did my thing and got through it. That was the biggest failure in the accounting side of things, the biggest misstep, I'd say. When it comes to running a business, I've started a couple. So a few years ago, I started a spice blend
company. Yes, that's right.
So it was interesting. It was a nice pandemic thing where I'm obsessed with trying to build something and create a product and, you know, sell. I was always obsessed with it. I was like, I got to find something. And spice blends became the thing. But what I failed to do is prioritize sales. And I got too obsessed with actual product and like the branding and the look and the way the jar sat and how the label was on the jar and all the other things that I forgot that the North Star is to sell the product, not to make the product over and over and over again.
Right.
You got to sell.
Yes.
So neglecting the sales side of the business as somebody who creates the business has been the biggest misstep in that one. And I'm trying to avoid it now going forward with other ventures. Is let's start talking to people. Let's start selling and really get involved in the selling process of this product. You have to have a great product. There's no way around that. You want to be able to stand behind your product and know you offer something really great. You also have to be able to sell it, get in front of people and show them that you can add this value. You can give them something that has some kind of value is very important.
That's great. I mean, it's important to, even for me throughout this conversation, to like check myself through it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's some great reminders and some really great, what I'm saying is I'm just giving you your flowers on what you're saying. And it's hard sometimes as an entrepreneur to take the step towards, okay, it's ready, you know?
You got it. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this big grand reveal. Of, you know, I've been working behind the scenes so long on this thing and this idea and this business, and now I have to present it to people.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's scary to bridge that gap and really get out there and sell it.
Totally.
But so important.
Yes. Yeah. And I haven't personally done any, I don't have much experience on the product, you know, services versus product. Although, mm-hmm. you know what, now I think about it, maybe on a lot of the rig building, yes, yeah, of course, yeah. But also the artist side of things. You know, when I had bands and stuff like that, and
you bet.
That is more on the mentality of product.
Mm-hmm.
But even now, having eights and stuff, it's there's only so many things that you can do before you just need to start talking to people about it.
That's exactly it, and it's very noticeable when you hit that stage too. All of a sudden, you're gonna be like, oh, okay, now I need money.
Totally. And you just cross your fingers that it's not too late.
That's right.
When you take that step. Fantastic. I want to ask you how you stay updated on industry trends, strategies, you know, tax laws, different things that are happening maybe in the background of a lot of what people think about in their business, but mm-hmm. you're basically at the forefront of that, you know?
You got it. And you know what? I'm in it every day. So like
I
work accounting all day. So it's always there.
Right.
When you're dealing with different types of businesses all the time, or you're just curious about the accounting side of things, the information just naturally flows to you because you're curious.
Right.
A lot of great, you know, tax updates that I've had are actually from being interested in stocks and investing.
Sure.
So I see a lot of these companies, there's headlines, and I'm kind of tapped into it. When I get curious about something, I just kind of go the distance with it.
Yeah.
And then you see a lot of tax regulation changes through financial headlines or any kind of online articles. You start getting the whisperings of new tax changes. Like the biggest one, for instance, is the new capital gains tax, where they're changing it from a 50% inclusion rate to a 66% inclusion rate, which was huge because a lot of people and a lot of people's parents and family members and everything have these retirement savings that they plan to use when they retire and to fund their lifestyle.
Right.
Once they stop working, this change in tax rate was on the front page for everybody there because they're thinking, okay, now I'm reducing how much income 16, I actually get. Because
16%.
Exactly. I have to pay more tax now at the end of the year. So that you immediately hit a 16% loss, which is something that everybody cares about.
Yeah.
That one goes the distance with that type of thing. Another cool resource I've actually been finding lately is when I'm not sure about something or, you know, trying to just do my due diligence and learn about an industry or learn about a type of business, I use ChatGPT.
Yes.
I get the input and then from there I'm inspired to be like, okay, I need to learn more about this and I need mm-hmm. to learn more about this. And then I can do the dives that way. That funnel of AI is just a creative tool. I love it.
Man, I love ChatGPT. I gotta say, it is just like it's become my Google.
Me too. I almost solely use it because it gives you a human response. It doesn't give you a bunch of web pages.
Yes.
It gives you a, hey, here's what you need to know. And then from there you can decide. It's like, okay, now I need to go down different rabbit holes.
Yes.
It gives it right to you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is really fantastic. And just not even to, in a conversation, you know, it's like, for me, I learned so much from just having a back and forth dialogue with, you know, in this case, a machine, but it just makes me reflect on how I'm asking the question, what I'm inputting, what it's giving back to me. And there's been so much, or even it's like, even if, like I'm currently designing, we are currently designing the AITS website, redesigning. And, it's just like, okay, here's this tagline or here's this paragraph. How can we modify it a little bit to, you know, be shaped in this way or how, you know,
or like
take this paragraph.
Dense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
exactly.
want something really keyword dense where it just hits at all of these markers we're trying to hit our target audience with. And it just nails it.
Yeah. It's great. And obviously, like 95%+ of the time there are edits to make, you know, but it's great to just get a dialogue going. Anyway.
You bet. It gets the gears turning. You know,
yes, exactly.
I use it a lot for writing actually, when I'm trying to write something and you're staring at a blank page.
Right.
And you don't know where to start. I always go to ChatGPT to get just a jump. I don't ever copy it because you can tell when it's a ChatGPT email that you get, you know, you can just read right through the computer.
Right.
It's like, they didn't put any time into this. This is a copy paste for sure.
Right. Right.
But it gets you thinking about how to phrase things or how to structure your answers, your responses or anything. It's just such a great tool.
Yeah. Fantastic. I wanted to just generally, maybe it's something that we didn't talk about on throughout our conversation. What is your top financial advice for any creative entrepreneur or artist, or just, you know, just individual out there? Is there something we missed?
You know, I think, I've got two, I guess. My top advice for a business for sure is cash is king. Always value your cash. Don't try to get rid of cash as soon as you get it. You can keep a balance in your bank account. You can be very strategic on how you spend that money. It's hard to get and it's easy to lose. So really prioritize some cash. The second thing is start investing young. When you're a young person, learn about your registered accounts in Canada. So if you're a young person, open up a TFSA, open up an RSP, open up a FHSA. You don't need to contribute all of it or to all of them. You don't need to contribute the max to all of them. Just start and put a little bit in every month. And, you know, talk to people you know who are also doing it. The best strategy I have, if you have no previous knowledge on investing or banking or any kind of long-term investment savings, buy an ETF for the index and invest in your TFSA. It'll save you a ton of pain when you're older because you've got this long time buildup of money that you've just been putting away for yourself. It's like a gift. It's like a reward at the end of your life. You get this little bit of cash you've been putting away all your life. And it start young. The younger you start, the better off you'll be when you get older.
Fantastic. It is great advice. And I echo that advice, not as a financial individual, but just having done it over the past few years, it's really great. I want to ask you, you know, we touched a little bit on it as well, but how you manage your, you know, your creative time between specifically the business and Vertigo Blue, because I know Vertigo Blue's sort of been, I don't want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you've had a lot of like different priorities a lot.
I sure have. Yeah.
And how you're managing Vertigo Blue specifically.
You know, music has always been this escape for me. It's like my hobby, but not a hobby. It's something I'm always trying to do because it's my release. It's like my second home, I feel like.
Sure.
And it's almost my first home because it's been something I've liked for so long, something I love, I always hold music dearly. And at any point in my life, I plan on having music involved completely through it.
Right.
Balancing it again, you know, there's stages that I go through, like seasons, and you know, the accounting I had to sprint through, and now with building this business up, I knew I had to sprint through this, and the whole team is behind it, and we're really trying to grow this business. And you know, over the past few months, we've been able to pour a little bit more time creatively into the Vertigo Blue project and get some great singles together and you know, have some fun. This is me having fun, this is me, you know, hanging out with friends and making something cool together that we can always share. Yes. That has its time for a priority, and the consistency will come as everything else becomes consistent as well too. So these stages of balancing act between the three things are really tough, especially if you're managing, you know, a full-time job with, you know, trying to start a business and then still trying to be creative. That's a burden. And, you know, sometimes I feel guilty for not being so active in them all the time and always on and always working and all of that. It's tough, but you have to find the balance that's comfortable for yourself, I would say.
Yeah.
Find your seasons, find where you need to sprint, where you need to prioritize, and then always find time for the things that make you happy and feel alive.
That's great. Do you have any, tools that you use to balance? Is it just like sort of a mindset thing, you know, being comfortable with, okay, I'll do this like, but only next month kind of thing?
That's right. You know, I think it's for sure a mentality thing because, you know, I've had, you know, different calendars and different types of ways that I organize my time between these projects. But I think the mentality is, I want all of these things and I'm willing to do what it takes to make it happen, but I can't sacrifice my health to do it. And I think that shift that I had where it's, I can do everything, but not all at once was the key to me to be more successful at all of the individual things in my life is, you know, taking time and taking care of one thing at a time, but knowing that you have this goal of doing a lot is important.
Right. All of it.
That's right.
Fantastic. I did, just because we're talking about it, any future aspirations for Vertigo Blue, yourself, Gemini?
Definitely. You know, Vertigo Blue, I want to be a, I want to be playing shows. I want to build a community around that art project of, you know, new music and a new feeling of alternative hip hop and, and rock, and bringing in those types of sounds to a wide audience. You know, I want it to appeal to a lot of people. I want it to just be this friendly, upbeat, fun type of music that, you know, you can build a community around it. I always love that about music, and it just brings people together.
Yeah.
With accounting and with Gemini, I want to grow Gemini into the go-to full artist service agency that I know we have the potential to get there, and we're working on it tirelessly over the past few months to get it there. But we want artists to take control of their finances. We want artists to build the art that they've always visioned for their projects, build up their vision, realize their vision, and then have a team of people behind them to support the finances behind that project.
Right.
That's the goal there. Go to. And then accounting is, I always want to just be learning more about accounting, building up that career and that financial expertise, because the more I learn and the more curious I am about things in accounting, and the more I'm able to help people, the more satisfied I feel with my career. Helping people with their numbers can change their life. And I think that's something that's really great about accounting, is you can really help a lot of people profoundly.
Yeah. What about individually? That's sometimes the toughest one. Yeah.
I haven't put too much thought into that, actually.
Yeah.
I want to have a family. I think that's something that I've shifted my mind on in the past few years, is, I want to become a dad and to raise kids my own, and to be a good husband, and, you know, having a good family life, I think, is really important, especially for people who are hyper fixated on business. Your family is your support system. Your family is the people who really care about you and are there for you, whether or not your business is winning or losing, or your art is winning or losing. It's your family. And in the past few years, I've really shifted on my priorities on being a family oriented person, for sure. So I think that's the answer.
No. It is a fantastic, it's a great answer. And, I feel the same way. There's just listening to podcasts, people talk about it, and just lately, over the past few years, like yourself, it's just, you know, the kids don't care if you didn't get that contract at work or whatever. You know, they want help with their homework or like things like that. So I'm striving to do the same in regards to, you know, as of right now, building a good foundation so that, you know, when the kids do come around, whenever that moment is, it'll be good for them, but also for myself, you know.
You bet. Yeah, it gives you a reason to just go that much harder every time.
You got mouths to feed. Yeah, or eventual mouths to feed.
That's right.
I want to wrap up the this 80th episode of the Cloud Machine Podcast, which is crazy to think about.
That's great. What an honor.
Yeah. Thank you.
Round number. That's sweet.
Congrats, thank you. Man. Thanks for being here. I wanted to wrap it up with one of the games that we play in the podcast. Maybe it's your first time listening to the Cloud Machine podcast, but we play a few games on the pod. This week, I decided to play the Dream Fest game with Chris Murmur here, basically allowing him to basically design or dream about his ideal festival. So I'm going to ask Chris, who the artists are, where it's going to happen, what era, what decade, does the festival have a theme maybe, and what is one food or beverage that would be served at the event that would best represent Chris, just as a fun one. So Chris, please, get us started on this. Can I ask you about the artists at the festival?
Yeah, you know what? I had to really think about this one, but I would want, I think, the opener to be a Charlie XCX DJ set, Boiler Room style.
There you go.
I think that would be an absolute blast.
Very in.
Here is the absolute craziest pivot. I want Title Fight to reunite and play the middle of the set. Play an absolutely insane hardcore show right in the middle.
Okay.
And then my headliner is going to be Led Zeppelin.
Yes.
We're all alive again and we are playing that
Let's
headline
go.
Spot.
Let's go. What a crazy three acts.
Oh yeah, it's all over the map. It's absolutely insane. There's no cohesion whatsoever.
No, that's fantastic. Where would this be?
You know what? I think in a huge like a beach setting. I love that 1975 Echo Beach concert. Really does stick with me. It's just, you know, being out in the sand and in the sun, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be really fun.
I don't know. I don't know if for people who are listening to this podcast might not know this, but the Echo Beach doesn't exist anymore.
I know. They shut it down.
It's crazy.
That is such a loss for Toronto music venues. That was a big one.
It is wild. It is absolutely wild. When in the year would this be, but also what decade would it be?
I think I'd want it right now.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of where we're at right now. I think we're only going to just keep getting better. And, you know, I want it right now. And I think my only policy at this festival would be no phones.
There you go.
Only digital cameras. That's it. That's all you got. You want to take pictures? Go ahead, take pictures. But we are locking in and we're enjoying this show.
So sick. Fantastic. Does it have a theme? Like is Charlie XCX, is it themed? And also is... Led Zeppelin, do they also have a theme? Is there a common theme?
Oh man, what should it be?
I don't know.
We could do something crazy like old English themed. That would be pretty okay. Cool. Led Zeppelin could play into that, but it would be hilarious to see everybody in an old English and get up.
I was just about to say Led Zeppelin wouldn't have to change a thing.
Yeah, they're pretty much there.
Yeah,
right?
Fantastic. And lastly, is there one food or beverage that you'd serve or both that would best represent you at the festival?
I think to add to the absolute chaos that is going on at this festival, let's do spaghetti. Big bowls of spaghetti.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That would be something, eh? You know, rock concert, but everybody's got a little bit of spaghetti in a plate, eating hors d'oeuvre style. Yeah. That would be pretty fun.
That'd be really great. And people would be fed too.
Oh yeah. Good.
Fantastic. Well, that's how we end this week of the Cloud Machine podcast. Thanks, Chris. It was really, honestly, very refreshing and so great to have a chat about this stuff. Cause we have literally never talked about it in what marks our 80th episode.
Well, I'm really happy I could be some voice of expertise here on the financial side. I'm really happy I could help out.
Totally. Thanks again.
Thank you, man.
This week on the 80th episode of the Clown Machine podcast, we had the absolute pleasure of chatting with Chris Mermer about all things financials on the creative side of things, whether you're an entrepreneur, artist, creative individual. I hope you gained just as much as I did. It's so valuable to get an insight into, you know, things like debt and saving and, you know, some advice to starting a business, to starting an artist project, and how you should look at your finances, looking at the health of your standing and all these really interesting and important things, especially in 2024. We also spoke specifically about Gemini, Chris's music group, venture that he has started, and his artist project Vertigo Blue. I really invite you to go check out Vertigo Blue and go check out specifically that that live version of What's Up, where we had the pleasure of musical directing on that through Eights and with my dear business partner Nate Day. As we look forward to seeing Chris and all of these projects and all of these ventures that he has, you know, I encourage you to go check out Chris on all that he's doing and to connect with him through chris@geminimusicgroup.ca. That's his email for Chris, and that is chris@geminimusicgroup.ca. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and share this episode with who could benefit from this advice and everything that we're doing here on the Cloud Machine Podcast. It is for you. It is for the people that want to know a little bit more about the music industry, the creative industries, and to pull that curtain back on the realities of what's happening. Our goal is to share these conversations, these real conversations with people who are actually doing the work behind the scenes. And I've been having a lot of fun doing it throughout these 80 episodes of the podcast. Also, be sure to join our new community, a new developing community on the Eights Network Discord. Whether you're a musician, an industry insider, somebody that's looking to get more information or even to get more contacts in the industry and start sharing their story and their journey with people online and through that community, the Eights Network Discord is the place to get started. Visit the links in the episode description today to join. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe, and we will see you next week. Bye.